Free FM.
Here you can be free.
Pin Gillette.
There's nothing you can do that can't be done. This is Pin Gillette in Las Vegas, Nevada, with a big, this is a big Tuesday. It is not Monkey Tuesday, but it is a big Tuesday. It's the Tuesday after the John Lennon supposed seance was last night. And we brought, we had our big winner. You've had a donut, haven't you? Yeah, we have Garrett here, who was our winner of the big contest.
Yeah, good morning, Penn.
Oh, hello. He got to come in here. We gave you donuts. We'll give you a tour of the house. You saw the big Penn and Teller show last night. Is that right?
Oh, wonderful stuff.
Good. Gets another donut.
Jelly,
we
please.
Also have Junior Jeff Welch. I know your last name.
I know you do.
Welch.
Sure. He's been here 12 years.
Because they both, what's that?
He's been here 12 years. Yeah. You don't know his last name, do you?
Welch. Welch.
Like C-H.
Raquel. Welch.
Like Raquel.
Welch, yeah. Welch. And they're the similarity of Raquel.
Exactly. That's the end of it, yeah. But so close to orange or grape juice. I can't even get the joke right.
Welch. They're here because last night these brave men, these psychonauts, watched the John Lennon seance all the way through. And they watched it so you wouldn't. I hope nobody listening right now watched the John Lennon seance last night. One of my friends in New York, Quinn, was so... we talked about it so much, she said that she had to watch it. So maybe she'll call in if she's listening now and give her comment. But we're going to talk about the John Lennon seance and how bad it was. Before we get there, do you want to do anything else? Yeah, Godot, let's see. We want to talk about the banana thing. I'm really, really embarrassed about that Kirk Cameron bananas thing. The thing about the atheist nightmare is the banana. The argument.
Yeah.
The argument.
Kirk
done.
Cameron.
If you do a search, it fits your hand perfectly. Yeah. And of course, we had a lot of people writing in saying what else would fit Kurt Cameron's hand perfectly, have the right bend, and fit right into his mouth. A lot of people wrote that, and a lot of people did this whole thing about if the banana is so perfect and God devised it that way, what about the coconut? What about the pineapple? There was one scientist on the web that I read whose entire argument, rebuttal to the argument, was simply the word pineapple after the banana was so perfect. But you know what bothers me about that is I didn't think of this, and only like a couple websites I saw thought of this. Bananas are man-made. For all intents and purposes, bananas are man-made. You don't get wild bananas. You don't get wild bananas that they're like little spiny things, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. And then we crossbred them, and I don't mean we bred with them, but we crossbred the bananas, and we grew them up into these things that are tasty and delightful. But they're essentially man-made. I mean, it's like corn. I mean, there's no wild corn.
There's no wild corn.
Like grass that we modified. And there's also a great, great, long letter on banana peeling that someone wrote in from an economics.
Not intentionally related, actually.
No, not intentionally related.
Not intentionally.
Yeah. But I'm going to read the banana thing, but probably tomorrow, because the banana thing is 2 pages. And, you know, 2 pages for a regular person to read takes very little time. 2 pages for me, because I often feel like every word needs to be commented on by me. I am footnote. I am parenthetical. I have to get everything going. So, well, the banana thing may come later. But Kurt Cameron, I think, may have done what free thinkers and skeptics since Robert Ingersoll have been trying to do.
Yes,
I think he made the argument for creationism, for intelligent design, so ludicrous. I wonder how many people are watching that atheist nightmare tape and going, maybe there isn't a God. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I wonder how much that's doing it, because it's like one of those things you can't ridicule. You know, I think Kimmel, you know, was saying it's the most homoerotic thing you ever saw. But you can't really ridicule it because it's so perfect. As a matter of fact, when I've watched that that video, I'm still not sure they're not kidding. You know,
so Kurt Cameron could be on our side.
Kurt Cameron,
Kurt Cameron's
not the guy that's talking about the banana, right?
No.
He's sitting next to him.
Yeah.
The guy talking about the banana,
lending his actor credibility.
That Steve Buscemi type cat who's like with the fake mustache. He looks like Sean Penn in the Falcon and the Snowman. He has that kind of look, you know. It's just it's nutty. And talking about the ridges on the banana and the no-slip finish on the bananas, so it's a nutty thing. So really, if you want to do a search for that video, the camera and the banana, I know it's been around for like a week now, but I just can't get it out of my head. It's so beautiful. But let's get to the thing at hand. Last night, the same cynics who did a Lady Di seance, what, a few years ago?
Yeah, a couple years ago.
And made $8 million doing that, which, you know, I am a hardcore free market capitalist. I really do believe in that stuff very much. But there is a certain thing that happens in capitalism where you can just make money simply if you have no shame whatsoever. And I think the Lady Di seance, where they didn't even find Lady Di, and they made $8 million on, they now decided to do the John Lennon thing. And we don't know how much money they made on the John Lennon thing.
We couldn't find it, yeah.
But you were watching it last night. How much was it? How much of my money did it cost?
What was that, 10 bucks?
10 bucks.
10 bucks, Jeff?
10 bucks, even $9.95?
Here's the thing, though, Penn, is that it's less about the money that it cost you and more about the fact that Jeff and I and my pal Matt spent an hour and a half each of our precious lives watching this crap.
What was it like? What was it like?
Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. I will tell you this. There was a disclaimer before anything went on, any of the, you know, the video montages or whatever. And it was just a black screen, basically, with a disclaimer that said, for entertainment purposes only. And right there, that said it all.
Was there any entertainment?
The whole enchilada right there.
Not for me, no.
A lot of eye-rolling entertainment.
Yeah. Now, how did they – do they have any footage of John Lennon?
Lots of footage. A lot.
How
of
do they have that? They
well, it was in pictures, actually. You know the – I guess it's called the Ken Burns technique where you zoom from one part of a picture to another.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
sure.
Like the History Channel does. A lot of that nonsense.
The Hitler Channel.
Exactly. There you go. Anyway, but yeah, it was no. Oh, God almighty. Why?
So the banana theory turns Christians into atheists, and this John Lennon thing turns atheists into Christians. You're just screaming to God for help.
Well, yeah, it turned this guy into an asleep guy anyway.
So how did it start, Jeff? What's happening there?
Like he said, it came up with the disclaimer saying that it was for entertainment purposes only and not affiliated with the John Lennon estate whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, no music involved. Well, there was music involved later, but from the grave. It started out with – actually, I missed the first little bit of it. He probably could tell you how
what happened. What happened? How did it start?
Well, here's basically it. They try to gain credibility by having a British narrator. And, they sort of lay out the whole stratagem of the mm-hmm. thing, and they break the whole sort of the setup into three parts, basically. You've got the one guy, this British dude, chap, I guess, walking around with his hands outstretched in front of him, passing by, you know, Penny Lane, the Strawberry Fields,
So they're all in England.
Yeah, all the Beatle hotspots.
Not the Strawberry
Fields.
Well,
no, actually, this dude did come to New York, actually, to check that out, too. But
the Dakota.
This guy, yeah, hands outstretched in front of him. I'm feeling John the whole time. Absolutely ridiculous. So basically, the eyes roll, and by the time they refocus, second part of the show is that this camera team.
Now, what does he do? What he's walking around there? Is he getting?
Oh, he's feeling John. He's feeling. I've seen pictures here. I'm feeling John's feelings in this area.
But does he tell you what John's feelings are?
Well, at one point at the death place, at the shooting site,
yeah. the guy says,
"Yes, I'm
the apartment of doom."
Right, exactly. a little bit of extrapolation there as to why is there murder in this world? But no, that
was
much John,
wait. Was it John Lennon thinking, why is there murder
here's
in this
the
world?
Thing, Ben. Here's the thing,
who
Ben.
Was he? Was he speaking
here's
for
the thing,
John
Ben,
Lennon?
That frustrated the living daylights out of me is that the whole
daylights is the word. It took him a long time to learn the word daylight.
Well, yeah, yeah,
this is what you're learning about radio.
Exactly. There was an expletive on its way.
There are things that your mom said
right.
and your grandmother said that you thought you would never say in your life. That all of us. Oh, for crying out wet.
That's right.
You know, you say stuff like, oh, fudge. Oh, fudge. Shoot. But go on.
The euphemisms are coming.
Okay, go ahead.
Anyway, among one of the thousand things that frustrated the living daylights out of me is that they had this guy, the feeler man, you know, with his hands outstretched, looking for John's aura all over Liverpool, all over New York. And then later on in a seance, lady doing the same darn thing, you know, some fat gypsy woman.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, the same thing the whole time. They're code switching. It's like folks are asking them, well, what's John feeling right now? And half of the answers will be like, well, I'm feeling great for the world, or sad that there's war, or some nonsense like that. And then they code switch automatically into, well, John's feeling this immense joy that Yoko's with him in the carriage, or some
nonsense.
Would
change the two
code switching the whole time. Such a bunch of liars.
Hooey. I think hooey is the word you're looking for.
Hooey.
Hogwash.
Exactly. Hogwash.
Hogwash.
Jive is also good.
Oh, my God. Bamboozled we were.
Yes. Well, what I'm trying to find out here, and this is, I think, is a difficult thing. What information they got in contact? These are the empaths or something. What do they call themselves, the first ones?
Joe Power is the British psychic he's talking about. Power. So if you see that name, run.
That's his real name, probably.
Sure. Joe Power.
And he would have his arms outstretched walking down Penny Lane. Yeah. I mean, they point out that the song Penny Lane was written by Paul McCartney.
No, they
had nothing to do with John Lennon at all.
This is another way they tried to gain credibility with the audience, is that rather than saying, well, Penny Lane was a Beatles song, they let the audience draw its own conclusions. It's horrible. Absolutely horrible. If I may ruin a little bit of the ending, there was a part on the film where basically this ghost shows up. And it's like this ghost, you know, with the bug-eye glasses, the Lennon glasses, shows up on the film, you know, and the technical producer is trying to explain it to everybody, you know. But they won't
say.
On
one film, on the video?
Yeah, on one of the videos. They're taking video the whole time.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, and this guy's trying to rationalize, well, I just can't explain it. I mean, the ghost looks like a picture of John Lennon was superimposed on the friggin' video.
It actually looked like a shot from the Mike Douglas show, honestly. That's immediately
really?
What I thought.
So was it the army jacket and
well,
that kind of look?
Actually, you could only see from about the nose up, and it was a very stretched out picture. Picture, but it was and very washed out white, but it was very obvious it was a picture of John Lennon.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to get out of you two,
yes,
and this is like pulling teeth.
Sure.
When the empaths are connecting with John Lennon, he said he was happy with Yoko, but Yoko is alive.
Right. No,
there was
a lot of
I'm here with George right now when we're laughing
George.
And happy. Yes, George would pop in every once in a while, and then when Joe Power would say now John is kind of shooing George away, and George is laughing about it, ha ha ha, because we want to speak to John. Very pandering to the audience, I thought.
Well, of course it's pandering to the audience. I just want to point out that we are on Free FM. This is Penn Jillette. 866-313-FREE. If you have some burning questions about this John Lennon seance, you can certainly call us up. 866-313-FREE-3733. You know, I don't know what the ratings are going to be on this, but because you mentioned George Harrison, I want to talk about my George Harrison theory. For those of you who saw Hard Day's Night, when John Edward had his stupid show on the Sci-Fi Channel, where Crossing Over, I guess he got another one that's called Hitchhiking Over or something, where he goes around the country and does these travel logs where he talks to people who had people who died, and they would talk about the ratings. Like you'd go in to pimp something into one of the stations, and they talk stations, one of the networks, and they would talk to you about how well the John Edward show is doing. So we were pitching a skeptic show. And they'd say, well, look at the numbers on John Edward. And they would make this argument that the people of America are really stupid because look at the number of people that watch John Edward. They must be stupid. So Hollywood would have this whole attitude where they would say, like I'd pitch something to them and say, sure, Penn, that's fine for you and me. But what about the idiots in the Midwest? And by idiots in the Midwest, of course, they meant people who could, like, you know, program a machine code, fix cars, you know, perform surgery, whereas we, who aren't idiots, cannot do a goddamn thing. We sit in rooms and talk about how stupid America is. And I would try to tell them it doesn't matter what John Edward ratings are because there's the George Harrison effect. In A Hard Day's Night, there's a moment when George Harrison wanders off from the group and goes into this office, which is a television office. It's where he plays with the sculpture and says, you don't see many of these around nowadays, do you? And kind of flings the thing. And he walks into this room with a bunch of television executives who are talking about a show that I think they're referring to Janie Jones, one of those shows in England, but some pop show, you know? And they look at George Harrison and say he's exactly their demographic, and they're going to ask him what shirt he wants so they can sell them better to the youth. And they say to him, do you watch this show? And he says, yes, we watch it all the time. And they're all celebrating. And then he says, we like to sit around, make rude comments, and have a laugh. Okay? And I don't think what Hollywood doesn't understand is that they put out this pure, unadulterated garbage, and then people watch it because they don't give a damn. They come home from work. They're tired. They flip it on. They look at John Edward. They say, what an idiot. Look at that fool. And they giggle a little bit, but mostly they're playing with their kids or they're talking to their wife about the day. It doesn't really matter. If you gave them better shows, they'd watch them. But of course they're going to watch the garbage because they don't care. And Hollywood spends all this time thinking that they're controlling the culture. And both sides fight on this. Both sides fight on this. The psycho Christians say, oh, you know, the Jews, they always do that. The Jews who control Hollywood are pushing their immoral values on us, right? Which is not true, because nobody gets their values from television. They get them from their genetics and from their family and from the people around them. That's where you get your morality. You don't get your morality from Malcolm in the Middle. You just don't. And then the other side goes, well, you know, we're not doing that. We're the gatekeepers. We're trying to give them, this is freedom of speech. The fact of the matter is that America, the smart Americans, do not give a damn about what the entertainment industry is doing. The people who are listening to this show right now are not forming opinions or changing their minds. They're trying to get work done. They're driving in their cars. They're working hard. And there's some loudmouth retard talking on the phone. And because they're human beings, they're fine hearing a little human touch. So whatever ratings this John Lennon show gets does not mean that's the number of people who believe that John Lennon came back from the dead. So he was talking. He said one of them said he was happy with Yoko.
Yeah, yeah. Let me reiterate about that part. Not only could this guy Joe Powers conjure the dead, he could also time travel. Absolutely amazing. I'm going back to a day in '76 back in New York, and feeling John and Yoko with me in the cart, and John's telling me how he's worried for the world, but he's so happy with Yoko, and it's his time. It's horrible stuff.
And what car was he in during
It was actually a horse-drawn carriage.
Uh-huh. Did they have a picture of John and Yoko in a horse-drawn carriage?
No, absolutely not.
Because I only saw John Lennon once, and it was in Central Park, and he was walking. There was no horse-drawn carriage at all there. And then the first section was just going around saying, I feel John Lennon.
Pretty much, yeah.
Basically, okay. Yeah.
And then they go into another section?
Yeah, second part was basically the camera crew troops up to the Himalayas to find this guru, a guru who plays the sitar and channels John Lennon from beyond. And basically, they didn't have this
It
guy.
Was the Himalayas?
It yes. was, I believe so. That's what they reported as. For some reason,
looked like that moon set, didn't it?
Right, exactly.
Now, there was a song that they got, right?
Well, right.
There was a song that they got, and there was also a seance. Is that right?
Two seances.
And we're going to get to those. We're going to take a break. Then we'll come back. We're talking more about the John Lennon jive bull hit seance that was on last night. We're talking more about that. It's Free FM. If you got questions or comments on John Lennon, 866-313-FREE 3733. There's nothing you can do that can't be done. Listen to the music carefully. Let's hear that. There's a guitar that wasn't in there before. You hear that sound? Just that little, it's like the French national anthem. It sounds like a little bit. Hear that? This little slightly back in the background theme. I don't know. That might have been an EVP we got right here on the Big Pen Gillette Show. 866-313-FREE. We got people calling in.
We do have a lot of people.
We got it. Well, let's open it up. Let's hear what they have to say. Let's talk to the people. Power to the people, right on. Tell your grandma in a rocking chair. Power to the people, right on. I'm channeling John Lennon right now.
Okay. Well, let's channel line five. We got William on line five.
I am no use to man nor beast, he said, his eyes all wet. That's why we're getting rid of you, you stupid bastard. Get. That's from John Lennon's A Spaniard in the Works. What do you got? Who do you got on the phone right here?
This is Will.
Hello?
How you guys doing?
There's doing William. Very well, thanks. How are you, man?
Listen, I love the show, guys. Listen, I have a question. Did Lennon happen to I'm a shareholder in CBS.
Uh-huh.
Did Lennon happen to mention how Les Moonves is basically throwing us into bankruptcy?
Shockingly, no.
No, I don't think John Lennon, alive or dead, gives a good goddamn about your finances.
You didn't see it. You can't answer that question. You have to stop.
Bye-bye.
What's that? That's right.
Let the guy who saw it answer
that question. Okay, sure. Okay.
Guy, John Lennon, William. Alive or dead, would not give a good goddamn answer.
Anything else, boss? Anything else? Oh, he dropped off. Okay. You got anybody else who wants to say anything?
Sure, sure. Why don't we talk to Line 8? This is Mike from Las Vegas. It's me.
Hello.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, man?
Oh, not too bad. Yeah, I just wanted to point out, I called a couple months ago. I'm an atheist. My wife and a lot of my family are pagan.
Right. Oh, yeah, we talked to you. Yeah, I remember you.
Yeah, I was talking to my dad about your plans for the debunking of the seance and all that.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not trying to justify it or the seance or say that it's good or real or anything like that. Obviously, it's total, you know.
Sure.
But my dad pointed something out that's kind of helpful for the war on all this BS. He said when you guys go after people like James Van Praagh and John Edwards, the so-called reputable psychics, it's fair. And if you beat them, then the world would accept it. However, with something that's so obviously just a bunch of horse crap,
yeah, that's,
you know, and a ploy to make money, he said in his personal opinion, as a person who does believe in that type of thing, even he thinks that the John Lennon thing is...
Yeah, that's a really good point. And this is a problem that the James Randi Educational Foundation has all the time. Whenever you're thinking about heroes and villains, a hero can only be as good as his villain. In the James Bond movies, you have these, you know, superstar, brilliant people going up against James Bond. And James Bond is cool because he brings down huge organizations. If James Bond was just, you know, beating up a homeless guy who stole the Twinkie, he wouldn't be as cool. And Randy always bumps into that because you have these low-level people that anybody could debunk. The guy who can talk to his goldfish, you know, people that can do all that. But the problem with that, and there's another side to this that I don't know how you solve. Your dad is 100% right. But there's another side that's a problem. Von Donkin, is that who did the Chariot of the
Donkin,
Gods?
Yeah.
Chariot of the Gods. He came out with this book about ancient astronauts and the chariots of the gods in the early 70s. And all the reputable scientists took that point of view. They thought it was so easily debunked and so foolish that they would not be scoring any points. They would not be teaching anybody anything if they came out against it. So what happened was that book came out with really no scientists coming out against it. They didn't want to, you know, the book was made of stink, and if you attack the stink, you get stink on you. It's just like what Matt and Trey said about going against, you know, some of the religious fanatics that talked about their execution on television after they did the Muhammad thing.
Exactly.
You have to make a statement, or to look like, you know, to somebody, even to me, if I didn't look at this stuff, I would say, well, you know, they attack Edward, they attack Von Praagh, but why didn't they touch this Lennon thing? Maybe because the Lennon had actual physical evidence. Maybe,
you know,
because they had
this
pictures.
Kind of weird from one atheist to another, but I'm going to mangle a quote from Deuteronomy in the Bible. This is, of course, is talking about people leading you away from God, but they say, do not conceal them, do not shelter them, always reveal them, show them no mercy. And I guess that's kind of what you're saying, you know, with these, with all this BS that's floating around there in the ether. Never conceal it, always fight it. Because,
well, you have to always call out the instigators and tell them there's something in the air. I mean, you really have to do, I mean, you quote, you just quoted Deuteronomy, and I just quoted Thunderclap Newman. That's the way we work. But that's the problem we do bulls hit, is that, you know, the shows are not equal. I mean, we did, well, the shows on chiropractic have people really suffering. You know, the show we did on PETA has this huge amount of money behind it. But we did a show, you know, last night on cryptozoology with the Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot. And we found people who believe that, too, and pointed it out. So I think it all comes down to exactly what's true for firm believers. And for non-believers, is you just have to tell the truth as you see it. And I'm not trying to manipulate people to not believe. I am not fighting psychics. I am not fighting people who believe this stuff. I am not trying to push my point of view. I am just trying as hard as I can to tell the truth as I see it. And I am wrong about every 20 seconds. I'm wrong all the time, but I would like, with help, to be corrected. So the John Lennon thing, even though it's not a worthy opponent for a superstar. I'm not a superstar. And it just seemed like this Lennon thing was jive, and it seems okay to say that. So I think we agree, Mike. It's just it's a really tough thing. We're not trying to manipulate. We're trying to tell the truth. And although that seems like a subtle difference, it's an enormous difference that I'm rather obsessed with lately. Yeah, thanks a lot, man. I'm sure we'll talk to you again. Why weren't you at the AIDS walk, you rat bastard? Oh, he hung up. That's the best time to attack people, is right after they hang up.
Yeah,
but, you
chicken?
Know, I thought for sure he and his pagan family would be at the AIDS walk, and I get to meet him and say how he did.
We just didn't see them.
Maybe did. You know, maybe did, but we don't know. So, EVP, what do we have on that?
There was a seance that happened at a restaurant called Cafe La Fortuna that John liked to go to in New York.
Uh-huh. I've been there.
Sure. And during the seance, we were sitting there, and we still heard the eerie seance music they were playing in the background. Ooh. And we could see them speaking, but not actually hear them anymore. And I thought, well, that's odd. So I went and checked all the speakers, and everything was fine. And then it came back, and I thought, okay, just a weird broadcast thing.
Hmm.
And at the end, the credible British announcer came on and said, well, there's an odd thing that happened during the seance. We lost the microphones during this section. And they cut to the tech guys, and the sound engineer said, I've been doing this for years and years. I can't explain it. We heard, we checked back to the audio tapes, heard static, and then a very clear voice saying, peace. The message is peace. And all I could say, and Garrett will back me up on this, all I could sit there and say was, play it. Play it. And they never played it on location. They waited until they got back to L.A. where they could enhance the audio.
Uh-huh.
And they played it not enhanced, and it was incredibly clear. It was amazing. And then, of course, the guy says, well, I've done noise reduction and this and that. And then it's very audible, that it sounded very time expanded and digitized, like it had been done in, say, Pro Tools or something like that. Or
by Dave Seville.
By Dave Seville. Actually, the pitch was correct. The pitch was correct, and a very bad Liverpool accent was to be heard.
Uh-huh.
It was just astonishing. And they had their EVP expert, whose name I didn't write down. But
Sandra Bellinger?
That's it.
It could be. Yes, Sandra Bellinger. And
I just want to make sure we get these names right, because these people should be marked for the rest of their lives.
Exactly.
On their
do not hire
record.
Sandra Bellinger. When she comes into your KFC, wants to get a job at the counter, if her name is Sandra Bellinger, fire her ass.
John Power was also there, who was very convinced that...
Now, when they had the time expanded, John saying, peace, was there kind of a whiny, high harmony part put on by Paul? Did he insist on coming in later and going, but I'm with the Beatles, I was one of the Beatles? Can I say... Because, you know, on Revolution, John is doing a great job singing, and then Paul's in the back screwing it up. Maybe, to some people. Other people really like that.
See, part. I would have figured if it's EVP, it would have been George.
Oh, sure. But George couldn't sing backups when he was alive.
Oh, that's right.
And, you know, George wrote everything in the key of E, which was too high for him. And he never learned to transpose. All through the day. He's up where he can't. I think if they had just told him, you know, you could retune your guitar. We're not going to make you learn other finger positions, George. But, okay, so he's saying peace. Go on.
He's saying peace. And John Power was there, convinced that it was Joe Power. Did I say John Power?
John Power. That's
sorry. Joe thing, Power. Right? There we are. And the EVP expert was there, and he was Joe Power was convinced that yes, it was John Lennon that they were hearing. And the EVP expert said, and I'm going to quote here: "It sounds quite a bit like the way he would phrase something.
Peace.
The message is peace."
And so that restaurant, what was the name of the restaurant?
Cafe La Fortuna.
So they let them in there to shoot, right? Cafe La Fortuna?
Yes.
Yeah, so we should maybe not go there anymore. But I do want to point out that if they claim that this is totally for entertainment, then part of what we're doing, I'm afraid, is debunking Blair Witch. I mean, do you think anyone watching this, any one person, would believe that this message was from beyond the grave, John Lennon? Or is it all just people doing the George Harrison theory and watching it just to monkey with it?
Just for fun, I'd like to think there's one person.
One guy.
One guy out there looking at it. Wow.
That's amazing.
That's really something. Wow. We'll be back with more on the John Lennon seance. 866-313-3733 if you want to call up. Yeah, I know. There's other stuff to debunk, too. When we debunk that stuff, they yell at us. Paula's dead. I miss Paula. That bass player you're hearing right there with the big Mike Jones Orchestra is the bass player is not Paul McCartney, but rather Penn Fraser Gillette playing the bass on that.
You can tell by the time.
The time is very good. Mike Jones. If you want to hear Mike Jones, more Mike Jones, our Mike Jones. The Mike Jones that plays bebop jazz, not the Mike Jones that does hip-hop. PennRadio.com. It'll take you to Jones Jazz. You can pick up, I think we have a lot of stuff Dustin's put on there. We have for free all the Penn Jillette themes, and we have Monkey Tuesday. We have the music for Monkey Tuesday. I don't know if you've heard that yet, but there will be a Monkey Tuesday eventually, and it'll have this music. He's not ready for that. It doesn't matter at all.
You know, we did get that photo, a picture.
Oh, it's a great photo. I want to go into that. Our good friend, Megan, a good friend of the show, Megan, sent us a picture that just says, I can feel John Lennon too. And she has a picture of, she's wearing a fishnet top with the breasts cut out. And she has her fingers over her nipples. And somehow, mysteriously, the funny thing was, it took me like 10 minutes to realize this. There is a picture of John Lennon between her breasts. But there's what's not misdirection in magic, but rather is distraction. I was looking so much at her breasts that I missed John. And strangely enough, John Lennon's head is about the size of one of her breasts. It's a beautiful, beautiful picture. Do we have someone else? Call? Yes, I wanted to say this is Tuesday, and not every Tuesday, but once in a while we have a Tuesday that is Monkey Tuesday. And that's the brand new Monkey Tuesday theme. No John Lennon on that. Paul is dead now. Do we have a phone call you want to get to?
We should. We should take line one. This is Jim.
Hey, Jim. What's up, man? How you doing, boss? Hey, Jim. The message is peace.
That's spooky.
Are you there, Jim?
I wonder if he was just whisked off by...
There he is.
Hello, Jim. Yes. What do you have to say?
My buddy worked for Frame Runner as a production assistant when they were doing the whole bit in that restaurant that you were talking about.
Oh, really?
And what he was explaining to me, as his boss described to him, was that they all use wireless microphones.
Uh-huh.
So they have the frequency sent through a transmitter and however garbage that works. And what he explained was that just by using a better mic with the same frequency, they can trump over what they were using to have the voices cut out and implant or put in this other voice.
Okay, so they were actually trying to fool the people at the restaurant?
Wait, what was that?
They were trying to fool the people at the restaurant.
Right.
I would have thought the people at the restaurant would just be plants. I mean, that's the way I do it.
Oh.
What's that?
It was a stunt, pretty much, coordinated like through one of the head guys at Frame Runner, who was there on site. And they didn't, my friend didn't know what the hell was going on at first, but later was explained to him.
Oh, I see. Well, okay, there you go. All through that, Jeff was nodding. That's what you figured, too?
Absolutely, especially because they said it was on only one of the mic tracks, not on, because they lost Joe Power's mic and Vincent Irwan's mic.
Say Joe Power's again.
Joe Power. It's like 2 days from now. It's a joke no one else gets. They lost both of those microphones, but they only got the messages piece on, I believe it was Joe's microphone track, not on Vincent's. So I figured, okay, they just kicked in on his frequency and cut out Vincent's at the same time.
I see.
It seemed very, very plausible to me.
And what did they do in the restaurant there?
Garrett?
Oh, cripes. this is. I'm sitting here shaking my head thinking about what nonsensical... God almighty.
Hooey.
Hooey, exactly. Yeah, that we're actually dissecting here, and I'm, oh my God. Anyway, like we were alluding to a little bit earlier, Jeff and I, that it's just basically Joe Power out there feeling around saying, hey, John's saying something about your ears. You know, and just basically fishing for something from the folks around the table.
Joe Power was doing a cold reading of the people there.
Call it. Yeah.
So he was saying, what'd you say? He talked about the remodeling of
a sink, or there's something he's telling me about your ears, or there's something he's telling me about.
What was he saying about the ears?
There's an old man there with a scarf on, and Joe was asking him, John's telling me something about your ears. And the old man, this is actually my favorite part in the whole thing. I actually smiled at this. Old man in the scarf looks at Joe Power and says, my ears are the only good thing left on me. And I'm thinking, old man, way to go. And what I'm thinking is this, the old man that was part of that first seance table, I guess was the owner of that Fortuna Cafe. I'm guessing he's in it for a couple of bucks. You know, that's about it. I'm sure he was as skeptical as the rest of us. But
well, probably everybody involved was skeptical. And maybe, you know, they say for entertainment, a lot of times what you have to do is take people at their word. When they put up a black card at the beginning that says this is 100% jive, maybe we just believe them and we're done. But they're also, so the seance, they talked about plumbing.
That's what
John Lennon wanted to say. Peace.
Yeah, from the dead. He's come back from the spirit world to say, "Hey, you moved the sink." And the owner even said, "Why does he want to know about the sink?" But he said, "John's saying something about a sink," and the owner says, "Well, we've done several remodels, and the sink has moved around a couple times. Yes, and he's saying that the floor is different. Oh, sure, with the remodel we did a whole different,
What year was it when John Lennon died?
1980. Yeah, okay. How long ago was that? Yeah.
Is there any restaurant in New York that hasn't changed? I mean, besides Ray's Pizza, that hasn't changed the sink and the floor?
Actually, my favorite was he's saying something about a jukebox, and this is when I got a little dismayed with the owner, because he started really giving out lots of information. He's saying something about a jukebox. Oh, sure, for his last birthday that he had, Yoko gave him a jukebox that had all the lights on the side and a really old jukebox, and it plays 78s. And later on, Joe Power says, I'm so glad John is giving us all these details about the jukebox he was given for his birthday. And I thought, no.
He never said details. Right. Well, that's a basic psychic trick.
Sure.
What does the name Bob mean to you? Oh, you mean my Uncle Bob. They did a lot of that. So then we go to the seance. Is that right? After this, did they do a dark seance?
That was the seance.
Okay.
There were two seances.
Now, talk to us about the song. Is it time to go to the song?
This thing was all over the place. But one of the recurring little tidbits that they kept referring to was the trip up to the Himalayas to find this guru who channeled John Lennon through his sitar. And this guy had the crustiest fingernails you've ever seen. That's what I saw, actually.
Okay, this is the guy on the Himalayas?
Exactly, up in his shack in the mountains. And anyway, so they record this guy playing the sitar for 5 minutes or whatever. The guy puts his head down and the camera crew leaves. And what they do is they send the tape of the sitar song that this guy played for him to some old hippie in L.A., and this guy basically transcribes everything onto notation, and he has a MIDI keyboard, and basically makes a nice mix of what this song would sound like if it were, you know, John on piano and, the Beatles behind him.
But were there lyrics to this?
There were lyrics, yes. And the way
the lyrics were from the old guy on the mountain?
Yeah, the way they got these lyrics, and they showed like 5 seconds of this, is this old guru wrote in Hindi on a piece of parchment, of course.
Probably goatskin.
Exactly. And
give him a Bic.
Yeah, and they had that translated, and the words were put to it, and that was the denouement, I guess, as it were. That was the...
Well, grab your Git box.
Oh, God.
Did you learn it?
Well, yeah. Jeff and I were actually twits, rolling our eyes, trying to figure out how simple exactly this song was.
Okay.
Anyway, hearing it once, basically four chords. And I don't know if this sounds Beatles-esque to anybody out there, but let me see. Free as a bird beat, something like this.
Okay.
But it was along the lines of...
Ooh,
that's right. Yeah, the second minor in there. Yeah. It gets a nice little
very beat.
But basically, the chorus was peace.
Can you sing it a little bit?
Not really.
Come on, give it a try. Maybe John will come in and join you.
Well, okay, I've got my guitar up here, Penn. Let me actually do my encapsulation, if I may.
Oh, sure.
As promised.
Before he starts, it's very important to know that the guy they sent this to is a professional orchestrator who was in several Beatles cover bands and was told to do the music in the style of John Lennon.
Okay.
All right, well, here's my thing. All right, guys. Imagine half a dozen filthy hippies. Barefoot in a circle, holding hands. Swindlers, every one of them. Pretending to contact a dead man. Now, why would anyone pay money to see such a sham on TV? They're just a bunch of new age shysters lying to make a buck. Live radio, I'm nervous as hell. God almighty. But if you're dumb enough to buy this type of crap, you must not listen to Penn.
Thanks so much.
God almighty, out of tune, out of time.
You're okay. Calm down. It's all right. It's beautiful. Did a fine job.
Oh, thank you.
Did you write down the lyrics to the song that that was channeled by John?
I didn't.
It just was peace.
It was peace.
Make peace. Peace. Mm-hmm. Make peace.
Well, there you go. So you reported back nothing even slightly, no little tingle of fear coming through that John might be talking to us from the other side?
No, I had to pee.
Yeah, that was what it was. My only fear was that I would die right then, and that would unfortunately be the last thing I see.
You know, Tommy Smothers told me a great story. He was on the recording of Give Peace a Chance, and he said, you know, Give Peace a Chance just is mostly C. For all of it, you know, everybody's talking about dragons and baggies and faggies. He just play a C. And Tommy said he wanted so much to impress one of the Beatles in this hotel room in Toronto that he said he had this cool inversion, this high inversion, way up the neck to play the C, to come in kind of on the offbeats with John. And they started recording Give Peace a Chance. And they're going, everybody's talking about baggies and shit. Hold it, Tommy. And Tommy goes, yeah. And John goes, just play a C chord, and then shows him how to do it with his fingers. And Tom's mother said it was the most embarrassing moment of his life when John Lennon corrected him there. You know, it's really remarkable that the love affair that John and Yoko had. Certainly, as in love as any couple has ever been, in love enough to break up the Beatles, which nobody wanted except Ringo, and that really strong power that when he came back, he would choose to come back pay-per-view with no contact with Yoko whatsoever. And the really interesting thing is Yoko is a nut. She believes in astrology and all this stuff. Even she can't convince herself that John's over on the other side and that she can get in touch with him. And I think that's one of the things that's so deeply insulting about not just the John Lennon thing, but, you know, the fact that my mom, and who I had an incredibly close relationship with, the idea that she would have to go through someone else to get in touch with me, that she would have to talk to Joe Power or John Edwards or Von Prague or any of these guys, is the part that is really so deeply and horribly offensive. But I do want to say there was a disclaimer at the top of this, which is really important, saying it's all fiction. Let's not forget that John Edward was on the Sci-Fi channel. I mean, one of the things we're asking for people to do is just take these people at their word. When they say it's just for entertainment purposes, don't say, oh, that's just a wink. They have to say that, but the real truth is they're telling the real thing. Take them at their word. And these are some words written by John Lennon that we'll close with. He really did write these. God is a concept in which we measure our pain. I'll say it again. God is a concept in which we measure our pain. I don't believe in magic. I don't believe in I Ching. I don't believe in Bible. I don't believe in tarot. I don't believe in Hitler. I don't believe in kings. I don't believe in Elvis. I don't believe in Zimmerman. I don't believe in Beatles. I just believe in me, Yoko and me, and that's reality. The dream is over. yesterday. I was the Dreamweaver, but now I'm reborn. I was the Walrus, but now I'm John. And so, dear friends, you just have to carry on. The dream is over. This is Penn Jillette missing John Lennon a lot and knowing that people on TV did not bring him back. He still lives on all the records, all the things he wrote, and in all our memories. Penn Jillette, Free FM. We'll see you tomorrow when the dream starts again.
Nice job, Garrett.
Nice job, Garrett. Thank you, Garrett.
Thanks a lot, John. Yeah,
and Jeff.
Check out Penn Jillette weekdays from 2 to 3 on Free FM.